The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly.
And good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the second hour of the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley, and I'm joined in the studio by Ada Nestor.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I'm here.
That was an interesting first segment there.
It was.
Lily was a very pleasant kid. I mean, that was nice. That was really nice, and that was fun. So what we're going to do right now is shift over to another discussion we've been anxious to have for a long time, and that is with Stacey Garrity. Now, for folks that are paying attention to sort of state government, and I recognize that's a relatively small part of our overall country because everyone obsesses about Congress and the White House. But we actually have a really important thing happening in this state, which is that we've got a very expensive state government that's getting more expensive by the day. Now, there are some voices out there that are fighting back against that, and one of those is our treasurer.
Thank God.
Yes. The Pennsylvania treasurer is Stacey Garrity. She's the 2026 candidate for governor. She's the endorsed candidate, having been endorsed by the Republican Party early, I would say.
Last month, I guess.
Yeah, about a month ago, something like that. And Stacey joins us now. So, Stacey, welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB.
Gary, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. And, you know, there's some things that you have done as treasurer that I don't think a lot of folks know about that we talked about a long time ago. One of those is that you went into Philadelphia and this is some like back when you were first treasurer and set up discussions to help people find unclaimed funds. This seems like a little thing, but the reality is there's money floating around out there that belongs to people and they don't even know it.
Yep.
You're right. And I went when I was running and then I went after I won and did the same thing. And basically, we tried to help reunite folks with their unclaimed property, which is money. And I have to tell you, so far, since I've been in office, we've given back over $1 billion.
Wow.
Breaking two records. In 2022-23, we hit $274 million in 1 year. And then just last year, we broke that record and hit $289.5 million.
Wow. I mean, those are real numbers. Now, I'll give you the wrong way to do this. In Ohio, 3R state, they decided that they were going to use unclaimed funds to give them to a billionaire to build a sports stadium.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they gave him $600 million of unclaimed funds and didn't bother to go find out who actually owned them. I think I like your approach a little better. I think I like what you're doing.
we also have, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Gary, but just this year, so Pennsylvania Money Match was enacted, and that allows the Treasury for the first time ever to proactively give back unclaimed property to people if it's under $500 and it's a single owner. So we've given back just in 1 year alone about $46 million.
Wow.
And the last of our checks totaling about, oh gosh, it's like almost 110,000 checks are going out in December. And so it's great. So I always encourage people, if you get a check, cash it. This is a real program. It's real money and it's your money.
It's got to be a shock to have the government actually send you money. I mean,
very rare, very rare.
So, and it's your own money. It's interesting. So you've been treasurer now for two terms. So you're in your second term, right?
Yeah, in my second term.
Yeah. And so you've been, you've had some time to work on this. I bet that when you showed up in Philadelphia saying, hey, listen, I'm campaigning for, I'm campaigning and I'd like to give you some money back. And then you actually showed up after getting elected and do it. I don't think that happens. Whatever is said during the campaign is immediately forgotten.
usually lost by the wayside after you get into office, but not for you.
Right. So
no, they were shocked when I came back and I said, well, I told you I would, and I always keep my word.
Wow. Well, that had to knock people for a loop there. So, all right. So now we're facing a situation in Pennsylvania that's becoming, I think, not to me, more bleak in that we're taking a state budget that was about $47.9 billion, and I can't imagine what they're spending that on. And now the governor and his allies have pushed and pushed to get that up for, I'd say, increase it by what, about $4 billion and spend even more money? What just happened with this budget?
It's crazy. And everybody's patting themselves on the back. And I can't understand it because last year they spent $3 billion more than what we brought in.
Yeah.
And then they increased it to just over $50 billion. So basically, they're starting with a surplus of $4.2 billion, and they're taking it down to $200 million. So basically, blowing through the entire surplus, and they think they're doing a great job, Gary, because they didn't touch the rainy day fund. Well, you should never use a rainy day fund to plug a budget hole. That's for when you have an emergency,
right?
Something that's one time. It's not to fund recurring programs. So I can't understand why all these legislators think they did a great job, because we're going to be, you know, what's going to happen next year? They're going to have to dip into the rainy day fund.
Oh, yeah.
To plug a budget, and then taxes are going to go up. There's no way around it. And we already have the fifth highest tax burden in the entire nation, and Pennsylvanians can't afford it.
Well, now you're explaining why we aren't seeing young people move to Pennsylvania.
Right.
It's not just that the economic development effort in this Commonwealth is weak. And I mean, you know, I know folks that were going to invest $500 million in a new facility, which turned out to be more like, I don't know, $700 million. And they called the state and they said, listen, we'd like to talk to your economic development people. They said, well, here's the website. So they went down to Arkansas and said, hey, we'd like to. And before they finished the sentence, they were in the middle of a meeting surrounded by people that said, how can we help? And what Arkansas did was so, I'm sorry, it was Alabama. What Alabama did was brilliant. They went out and invested in creating a workforce that had the skill sets that employers need without requiring employers to commit to hiring that workforce. They said, listen, if we build it, they will come. And by creating a workforce full of skill sets, which they did in a cooperation with all these sort of trade schools and these you know, other institutions of learning, they created a place where not only was it economically inviting to come, but there was the skills you needed were there. It was a no-brainer. So that project obviously went to Alabama, and another one that I know went to Arkansas, and none of them are coming to Pennsylvania.
Well, imagine if we would just apply some common sense, because we all know, and we back when I was in the private sector, because, you know, I'm not a career politician, we had a skilled labor issue then, and it's only now exacerbated because now we need a lot more because of, you know, AI and, you know, we need to do a lot around that space. And yeah, we're not getting it done. I mean, look at Ohio, Jobs Ohio. They do a tremendous job. And even West Virginia is doing a lot better than us.
Well, you know, I mean, that's just West Virginia, of course, has been in a sort of tough economic position since the Obamas attacked the state and war on coal, war on industrial, you know, where they had a very big mining and industrial base. Which has been really, really devastated. But
when everyone was told to learn to code,
that was it.
Whoops.
Learn to code.
Yep. Yeah. Now AI is coming for those jobs. So right. Whoops.
Well, AI, H-1Bs. I mean, that, truth be told, learning to code wasn't good advice.
No.
As
it
we've
was
heard
not.
From a lot of kids that put a lot of money into good schools.
Into coding.
You know, yep. If you think about the technical skills you can generate in the universities in Pennsylvania from you know, Carnegie over in Pittsburgh, all the way over to what's, you know, over here to, you know, Penn. It is an incredible base to develop the workers you need. But if you don't have the industry to hire them, if you're bringing in people from other countries to fill those jobs, what's the point?
Right.
Exactly. We have tremendous trade schools. We have tremendous universities, and we educate our kids. And then where do they go? They go to Ohio. They go to Virginia.
Yep.
They go every place other than Pennsylvania. Because, you know, we're not business friendly. Let's face it. We're the 12th highest regulated state in the nation. It's ridiculous.
And let me tell you, you don't want to die here either. If you have any inheritance coming to your kids that is not super significant and a whole lot of money to offset the taxes you're going to pay on it here, don't die in Pennsylvania. I just lost my father this summer, and I am the executrix of his estate. And let me tell you, the hoops I have to jump through just to take care of that are unbelievable, whereas I've talked to people in other states who don't have the same issues and the same dilemmas that we face here in Pennsylvania.
Well, you and I spoke about that.
Yeah.
And I was saying, listen, you know, I went through this in Ohio. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly.
I was totally
all
confused.
All the people I go to for help can't help me because they've dealt with it in other states.
What in the world are you talking about? And so one of the points you just made, Stacey, this idea of this regulatory burden. You know, we as a nation are facing a massive regulatory burden at the federal level that is then duplicated at the state level. And these regulations have given some of our agencies the power of tyranny because they could just read these any way they want, come in and impose their will on people and cost them huge amounts of money or loss of assets or whatever. You know, I don't think the average voter really understands the impact of these regulations and what it's doing to them and where they come from. How do you deal with that? If you become governor, like, what do you do to lighten that load?
First of all, I mean, even if you look at the Liquor Control Board, it used to be like a 3-board member, and now it's something like 8 or 11 people. Yep. I mean, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. And DEP, I call don't expect a permit. It just keeps worse and worse and worse. So I think there's a lot of reform that can happen in all of these agencies. And basically, we need government to get out of the way.
Well, and I can tell you,
in the way.
I can give you a perfect example that's the opposite of what's happening here, which is Indiana. When Mitch Daniels became governor of Indiana, this is how impactful a governor's race can be. Mitch Daniels becomes the governor of Indiana and goes to his Environmental Protection Agency and says, listen, your job is not to halt growth. Your job is not to drive away jobs. Your job is to simply enforce the regulations and protect the environment. And so he let the agency continue to operate. They refused to change their ways. He fired the whole group, brought in new people. Now, that was years ago. I can tell you that the environment in Indiana is better today than it was then. And the jobs environment completely changed. It drove massive economic growth. It drove income growth. It was fantastic. The governor did that simply by force of will. He didn't need to go through the legislature. He did it himself. And that's why people, again, I don't think they understand the critical nature of a governor and the role that governor plays in actually driving their lives, their economic outcomes. I just don't think they get it.
No, I don't think they do either. And Gary, I mean, we rank as a state 38th in the economy, 39th in education, and 41st overall. I mean, you can sum it up in one word, mediocre.
That's
and
right.
It doesn't have to be that way. We should be leading the nation.
You mentioned education, and I got to tell you, you know, we've talked about this a lot. We've looked at the numbers, and we've looked at spending, because we're always told that the problem with education is we're not spending enough money.
They don't have enough money.
It's all money. They don't have enough. We're grossly underspending.
So much money goes to education in Pennsylvania, by the way.
It is shocking. I think the budget for Philadelphia's school system is something like $4.65 billion.
Yeah.
All right. It's about $23,000 a student, which is the average for the state. So Philadelphia is right at the average for the state. But if you look at Ohio, which has better outcomes, Wisconsin, you look at some of these other states around us, they're doing much better and they're spending significantly less. In some cases,
14, 15.
What's
right?
that?
Like 14, 15,000 a student or less.
Yeah, maybe up to 17.
Yeah.
But they're not at 23,000. So say $5,000 to $7,000 per student less, meaning billions and billions of dollars less. They're not ranked 39. They're all ranked way above Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So how do we fix that?
Every year we throw more and more money at education. We just did it again. And we think we're going to get a different outcome. And when do people figure out that you can't just throw money at a problem? So I think, you know, the answer is obviously school choice. So cyber charter. I mean, I think parents, not bureaucrats, should decide what is the best way to educate their kids. And it should not depend on where they live, what their zip code is.
We see that we definitely have seen the explosion of charter schools or more parents going down that road with their students, their children, especially since COVID. I know that, you know, I'm split in our household. We have one child in cyber charter and we have another child in brick and mortar high
really?
School. So, you know, I have one home with me full time right now, but it works better for him. We just went through an appeal process in Westchester for Valley Forge Classical Academy. It was a charter school. They were proposing a brick and mortar charter school, and they had to go to the appeal board, and they were still denied the ability to open that school. So the state, and I think Shapiro actually was elected by promising to work with school choice in 2022.
Yes, he was.
And then completely abandoning that promise and leaving all of those people who maybe crossed the aisle to support him in 2022 based on that promise, disappointed and searching for a different choice for next year. So I'm happy to hear you talking about school choice. It's a very big issue for parents in Pennsylvania.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm running, Ada. I mean, the governor has had not one, not two, but three positions on school choice. He was for it, as you stated, went all over Fox News saying every child of God deserved a quality education.
Yep.
And then he was against it. And now he said, you know, it's up to the legislature. And since we have a split legislature, that's quite the cop-out.
Well, this isn't just subjective. The numbers show this, right? So I just pulled up some of the numbers. Pennsylvania's number 9 in spending on education, number 9. Number 39, as you said a minute ago, in overall outcomes. We're ranked number 39 in effectiveness of education, 28 in college readiness, 18 in math scores, 28 in preschool, 20 in high school graduation, 19 in reading scores. The only thing we rank at near the top on is spending.
Exactly.
And if money solved the problem, then we would have no problems here in Pennsylvania. We certainly spend a lot. And I think COVID years also exacerbated the amount of money that the government was spending from the state level down to your township and school board level. And no one wants to cut back their spending to come back under the budgetary limitations that they had prior to COVID. So we're seeing this. These tax increases across the board from your boroughs, your townships, all the way up to the state.
So
you're right. And if you look, about a little less than half of our eighth graders can even read at grade level. And
right.
Just if you look at it through the lens of return on investment, it's terrible.
Yeah, it really is. And when we think about when we think about this, you know, again, the question becomes then, what do we do about it? What do we do about it? How do we get this fixed? And as governor, what could you do?
Well, I think school choice and, competition and, it should be performance-based. I mean, my goodness, look at all the states that have school choice and how they're really thriving. I mean, I live in a very rural area, not there very much, but Bradford County doesn't get much more rural than that. And there was a gal in high school, her name was Marissa, in the 10th grade, biracial, and so she was bullied and harassed. So when she was in the 10th grade, she and her mom made the decision that she was going to go to a cyber charter, and she made honor roll, and her grades went up every single semester, and it just opened up so many doors for her. So can you imagine how many kids across the Commonwealth that school choice could make a big difference in their lives? And it would be a lifeline for them.
No, it really could.
And the argument against school choice is that it's going to hurt public schools. It's going to destroy these public school systems. But you said the magic word there, competition. Listen, if you are not providing a good education for these students, their parents should have the ability, whether they're rich or not, to move their child somewhere where they're going to succeed, where they're going to have a level of success that maybe the public school can't offer them. And right now, in the way it's set up in Pennsylvania, unless you are wealthy, you cannot do that for your child, unless you do something like we're doing. But what we're doing means we can afford to have me home full time to educate our youngest child while my husband goes to work. So there is a wealth there that others still don't have. I know I was a single parent years ago, and I could have certainly not been able, would not have been able to do what I'm doing today. So we need to take it away from these only the wealthy people being able to do this for their children and level the playing field for all Pennsylvanians.
I agree. It should absolutely not depend on what your zip code is, the quality of your education. And this really is a lifeline for kids. And, the governor might be able to afford to play political games with our kids' education, but, our children and our parents certainly can't.
No, they can't. And so clearly The numbers and everything we see and everything we experience show that our education system in this state is I would say, not only expensive and ineffective, but it's increasingly radicalized. And it's obviously an area of attention. The idea of going after these regulations, you know, the Trump administration is targeting, I think, 300,000 regulations, that if they can get rid of those, it's a $4 trillion bill for the country. In other words, it's such an economic drain that it could equate to about, I don't know, 20, 25% of GDP, right? It's a massive problem, and it's the same here in this state. And so when I look at the collective impact of those two things, just the economy and this regulatory bird, this tyranny of regulation, and the schools and the radicalization of it, and the failure to deliver reading and math and science proficiency, and I come back down then to this exodus of young families. So we have about, I don't know, over 10 years, we've lost about 300,000 students. We've seen a decline in population. You know, how do we sew all this back together so that we address housing and some of these other issues, so that the folks that are exiting stop and maybe we attract people back to Pennsylvania?
I mean, honestly, we have to be so much more business friendly. We need, somebody that is like me that will promote Pennsylvania, because we have everything here. We have hardworking people. We have such abundant natural resources, mm-hmm. and we have world-class industries. We have everything here that we need to succeed. We just need the right person to unleash it all. And, we're not going to do it with the governor that we have, because, he panders to far-left activists, quite frankly.
Well, the far-left activists, yes, clearly. But there's also, it seems to me, this idea, this goal he seems to have of being president, that this is a stepping stone for him. And whatever he needs to do to pander to the people who pick Democrat candidates for president is going to also be a key focus for Shapiro.
Yeah, he's certainly more interested in Pennsylvania Avenue than Pennsylvania. And we should not be putting politics ahead of Pennsylvanians.
No. You know, and it is such a beautiful state. It's a wonderful place to live.
I was just going to say, we have all four seasons. You know, we have beautiful scenery. It's a beautiful state. It's, you know, Gary and I were talking before the show about our feelings on where these bills are going and where these laws are going and where these elections keep going and the idea of leaving this state. But it's hard to leave Pennsylvania. It is beautiful here. And it's worth fighting for, yeah. I think. It's worth, you know, continuing this fight to save the state, because it is beautiful and we do have a right to live here and to enjoy it.
I absolutely agree, but we just need leadership.
Yeah.
We need leadership. We need somebody that's going to show up, roll up their sleeves, get the job done. We need a governor that's not thinking about Pennsylvania Avenue and the White House and the kind of drapes they're going to put up. We need somebody that wakes up thinking about what can they do to help Pennsylvania and goes to bed thinking, you know, what can I do to improve the lives of Pennsylvanians?
And I think it was the artwork.
And I can tell you, that's me as treasurer. I'm doing that already. We've gotten a lot of stuff done. Like Gary talked about unclaimed property, and we've reduced education in our 529 plan by over $22 million. And that's money that goes right back into the pockets of hardworking parents. And we have opened up our books at Pennsylvania Treasury, and we are the most transparent agency in the Commonwealth. Because you know what? It is our money. It is not Harrisburg's.
Right. That's right. Now, if we flip over to this legislature problem we have, and I say it that way because a few years ago, the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate. Obviously, you know, that there were some things that made us more secure in. I think there are some things maybe they could have helped us with, like lowering this gasoline tax would have been nice. But all right, they didn't do that. But nevertheless, there's still the bulwark that stands against loss of our rights and privileges. If you look at what happened in the House since the Democrats took over the House, it's gotten more and more radical. And just this week or last week, was it last week, I guess?
Last week.
There were more than three. There were a bunch of bills that went out. They were voted on November 12th. But we're talking about forcing gun dealers to create a database. We're talking about give the courts the power to strip rights from citizens on accusations of emotional distress, which we would call red flag laws,
yeah.
right? And so this is where, so people understand what a red flag law is. This is where, like, the cousin that's mad at you can call the court and say, hey, this guy's crazy, take away his assets.
The girlfriend mad at the boyfriend can call the police and say he's violent or unstable, and there you go.
And this happens. I mean, in Maryland, when they introduced their red flag laws, a niece called on her uncle because she was an anti-gun leftist radical. So she called and said, my uncle's crazy and he's got guns. You got to go take him away. They shot him dead when they went to collect his firearms. They went in and they literally killed him. Now, I think that was actually as much a message as anything else. But when you look at this, you know, what we're seeing are you know, House Bill 1935, backdoor to lifetime gun bans for speech or social media posts. I mean, we're talking about a house now in Pennsylvania that is radicalized and dedicated to stripping away our constitutional protections that preserve our rights. You know, the only defense we have here is three seats in the Senate. We're now just a three-seat advantage in the Senate. It was six or seven, and that's gone away. Now it's three.
You're exactly right.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say that's why it's so important that we pick up, you know, we need, what, one seat to tie?
Well, we have to do better than tie because the Republicans give up. Even if we are down by a seat or two, they let the Democrats take it in the House. At least that's what happened last time.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on that. That's crazy. But so right now it's 102 to 101. And there is no reason why we can't get this thing turned around. And it is so incredibly important because, as Gary said, the only thing standing between us becoming like California or New York is the state Senate.
Yep.
And they're really holding the line, and it gets thinner and thinner.
It's a real thin line.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So I, if you're up for it, we have a couple of callers that might have a question. Not sure what they want to talk about, but maybe let's take the shot. Are you willing to take some questions?
100%.
Great. So Jamie from Pittsburgh. Jamie, welcome to the Conservative Voice. You got a question, a comment?
Hi. Yes. Hi. I'm so excited to get to talk and ask my question today. I just all week feel like I have been reading all about this this new budget that just passed, and I am not sure how I feel about it right now. And I was wondering if I could ask the treasurer, Stacey, how would you have voted for the budget?
Hey, Jamie, thanks for that question. And it's a great question. And there's no way I would have voted for that budget, because the issue is we now, at the end of next year, we will be down to just our rainy day fund. And what that means is, you know, rainy day fund should be for when you have a rainy day, when you have an economic downturn, or when you have an emergency. It shouldn't be used as a source to fund recurring programs. And what's going to happen is, if we don't get things turned around, and we can't just keep kicking the can down the road one year at a time, we have to be strategic. Taxes will go up. And like I mentioned earlier in the program, Pennsylvania has the fifth highest tax burden in the nation, and Pennsylvanians can't afford it. And so, just like we expect our families to live within their means, our state should be doing the same thing. So no, I would not have voted for it.
Okay, thank you so much for answering.
Thanks for calling in, Jamie. Thanks for calling the Conservative Voice.
Have a great weekend.
I think we've got a second caller, Sabrina. Sabrina, welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was just wondering, I am concerned about the amount of spending on education. I think we're spending a lot of money for, as you've seen, no results. And was just curious if you'd reallocate that spending away from the schools, or sort of what your plan is to address spending levels on education and make sure we're getting our money's worth.
Hey, Sabrina, thanks for the question. Thanks for calling in. That's great. So what we have to do is we have to enable parents to make the decision on the best way to educate their kids. So first of all, I think we have to, you know, increase what we're doing in cyber charter, We need more school choice and empower parents. And that's going to increase competition. And then I think, you know, I come from the private sector. I am not a career politician. So I think that you can always look for efficiency. And efficiency doesn't mean throwing more money in an issue. It looks at common sense ways that you can reduce your costs. And when you're in the private sector, you have to come up with 3 to 5% every single year. And I do it at Treasury every single year. And there's no reason that, you know, our education department and, quite frankly, all the other 70-plus agencies shouldn't be doing the same thing.
Yes, thank you so much. I'd also read that there are some senators proposing eliminating the property tax to ensure that we can continue to pay these costs, and was curious how that would, if you knew how that would impact the schools or what your thoughts were on that.
So property tax, everywhere I go, and I go to all 67 counties, by the way, every single year, and it's a huge state, everybody brings up property tax. And so I think it's something that has to be addressed, but to address it, we have to bring in some revenue streams because we'd have to replace it. So I think a first step is basically to freeze it for our seniors at a certain age to make sure it doesn't increase, because a lot of seniors are having a hard time staying in their homes. And so I think that's probably the biggest, you know, first step. But we're also looking at, you know, best practices from other states like, you know, Florida and some other states like that. But to do it, I think, you know, we have to absolutely generate revenue. And the biggest way to do that is basically to unleash natural gas, because in Pennsylvania, we have 25% of America's natural gas right under our feet. We can unleash it responsibly because everybody deserves clean air and clean water. Yep. And then we can, you know, keep continuing down the road of looking at property taxes and so many other things that we need to be addressing.
Thank you.
Sabrina, thanks for calling the Conservative Voice. And, you know, you hit a couple of really important points there. One, I don't think Pennsylvanians really know, maybe down here in the Southeast, that the oil and gas industry was born in Pennsylvania in a town called Titusville next to the town called Oil City.
Yeah.
And if you're
sure
ever,
was, great.
Yeah. And there's a great Colonel Drake's well is actually, you know, there's a modern version of it up there. You can go watch how it worked. It's fascinating. It's a great visit to go see where the oil industry was born. It's Oil Creek Park and up in Titusville at the Drake well. So that's an important point, is that you can bring on even more benefit from these energy resources that we've got. We've got the technology to extract them. We can extract things that we couldn't extract even, you know, in the 1970s or 80s when Pennsylvania was really pumping a lot of oil and it sort of played out a little bit. Now, with the directional drilling we do, you can find anything anywhere. It's really tremendous. And so we need to exploit that more. But this property tax issue you mentioned, I mean, that Sabrina mentioned, that is really critical. In Ohio, citizens are now canvassing the state, gathering signatures on a petition to eliminate property taxes. This has become an issue that 10 years ago, I don't think many people talked about.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that here in Southeast Pennsylvania, we're seeing property taxes increase dramatically every single year at the county, at the townships, at the boroughs, and in the school districts. And there just seems to be no relief. They just can't get enough money because they're passing it out for all kinds of crazy reasons. They don't necessarily talk about how they use it. They just always must have more. I don't know if there's something that can be done at the state level to help get us some relief on these egregious increases in property taxes every year. Is that something that can be dealt with?
That's more at the county level, but I think that legislatively, I think we can do some things. I mean, it absolutely should be kept. I mean, the biggest way to address it, okay, let's face it, is to unleash energy and bring in more revenue.
Yep.
And that's going to solve a lot of our issues. And, you know, I wanted to make the comment that Pennsylvania, I think we're the sixth highest state as far as electricity increases over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And when you look, so Governor Ed Rendell, he had enacted this alternative energy tax. And ratepayers paid in 2024 alone, and people don't know this, Gary, $702 million. And Josh Shapiro has his own version of that, and that would increase it by 335%.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And now you got the data centers coming, and you know, I know that we're supposed to all celebrate that because it's economic development. The problem is it doesn't bring jobs and it drives up costs. So I'm just not yet very excited about that. But that's maybe a discussion for another day. Stacey Garrity, Pennsylvania State Treasurer, candidate for governor, endorsed by the Republican Party of Pennsylvania. And, you know, we really appreciate you taking time. I know you're traveling and you're doing this between flights or something or between driving places. We really appreciate you carving out a little niche for us here.
Oh, no, it was great to be with you this afternoon. And I look forward to being on your show many, many more times.
Great.
We can't wait.
Thanks again. I'm sure this is going to be quite the year. It's going to be an interesting battle. So we're looking forward to it. So thank you. So that was Stacey Garrity again, you know, candidate for governor. This is going
she's
to be
fantastic.
An interesting
yeah,
year.
She's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. This is going to be something to watch how this plays out. But now we're going to shift gears yet again.
Have a little more fun today.
And, yeah. Now,